Have you noticed how hard it is to finish a book lately? How birthdays feel like just another day? How you scroll endlessly but absorb nothing? How time itself seems to behave strangely, clustering in dark corners, looping back on itself? You're not alone in this peculiar emptiness. Catherine May's Enchantment names what many of us have been feeling but couldn't quite articulate. We've lost our capacity for wonder. Not the manufactured amazement of viral videos or Instagram sunsets, but something deeper, an ability to truly engage with the world around us. May, diagnosed with autism in adulthood and emerging from burnout, doesn't offer productivity hacks or mindfulness apps. Instead, she invites us on a journey through earth, water, fire, and air to rediscover what she calls enchantment, that small wonder magnified through meaning, an essential nutrient found only when we dig into our own soil of experience. This isn't depression. There's no self-loathing or destructive urges. It's something stranger, a difficulty engaging with anything substantial, an attention that slides away despite genuine desire, a feeling of flickering rather than existing solidly in the world. Friends describe similar states, attributing it to pandemic exhaustion, political upheaval, or that catch-all term, burnout. But what we're really experiencing is disenchantment, a disconnection from meaning itself. In our age of constant distraction and mounting anxiety, this book arrives like medicine for a sickness we didn't know how to diagnose. We've abandoned the rituals that once guided life's passages. Marriages become legal documents, deaths are processed bureaucratically, and our deepest experiences remain unspeakable in their modernized sterility. We inhabit what scholar Mirza Yalade called a shattered universe of neutral places, shopping malls replacing town squares, digital screens substituting for storytelling circles. We're consumed by survival's endless labor, emails, bills, catastrophic headlines. The overwhelming scale of modern existence makes us feel increasingly small, lacking what poet John Keats called negative capability, that intuitive ability to dwell in uncertainty without frantically grasping for resolution. Without enchantment, we can only administrate life's seismic changes through to-do lists rather than truly integrating them into our lived experience. May's grandmother would settle into her green Chesterfield chair and massage an orange between her knuckles before methodically peeling it. Having lived through wartime rationing and the Great Depression, she treated them as precious gifts. The spritz of orange oil catching light, the citrus scent filling the quiet air. The ritual transformed a simple fruit into something holy. This is hierophany, how the divine reveals itself through worshipful attention, transforming ordinary objects into portals of meaning. Seeing the sacred isn't magical thinking. It's a perceptual shift, like artists finding beauty in mundane objects. Humans instinctively sanctify certain places, birthplaces, childhood homes, first kiss spots, but we've largely lost this practice. Indigenous cultures maintain deep connections to place, where every rock, tree, and river carry stories and spiritual significance. May envisions ancestors moving through landscapes where each landmark unpacked its own mythology, familiar places becoming maps of wisdom blooming like fractals. This embodied knowing activates a different intelligence, what some traditions call body wisdom or cellular memory. The challenge is surrender, letting yourself be cracked open, maintaining a vulnerable heart. These cracks, as Leonard Cohen suggested, are how the light gets in. 2 days before lockdown, May took her son Bert to the woods, hoping to teach him nature's comfort. But Bert ignored her plans, immersing himself in muddy puddles instead. She brings bark rubbing materials, he pretends to catch Pokemon. His resistance reveals the gap between adult intentions and childhood instincts, between structured learning and pure experiential joy. Modern childhood has traded dirt for hand sanitizer, offering what May calls shallow terrain, plastic play centers, and overly specific toys that quickly lose appeal. These environments permit only fun while excluding messier feelings and must eventually be abandoned as childish. The forest, however, is deep terrain, offering unending variance, complete sensory engagement, seasonal changes, and mythological resonance. It's simultaneously safer than spiteful playgrounds, yet more genuinely dangerous. Deep terrain offers multiplicity rather than answers, teaching compromise while revealing time's circular nature. A fallen log becomes bridge, castle, creature. Bird songs create ever-changing symphonies, connecting present to ancient patterns. May wants her son to inherit deep terrains as birthright, to crave complexity and feel dissatisfied with shallow experiences. This connects to her own compromised childhood landscape: mud tracks, marshes with rats, swans near an abandoned asbestos factory, where she found magic in small wonders, browning rose petals in buckets, chimney lights across the river, headlights ghosting across her quilt. May has lost her ability to read, a shameful secret for an author. Her consciousness retreats to some inaccessible inner sanctum. She cannot shepherd attention through a single chapter. Fiction suffers most. She's developed complete disinterest in stories about people who don't exist. After a frightening swimming incident, May began taking lessons to rebuild confidence, but the pandemic cut off access to both pool and sea. Her Meniere's disease worsened after contracting COVID, causing dizziness and nausea from excess inner ear fluid. The sea no longer feels safe, too wet, too much like inside her head. Yet at the coast's lowest ebb, she still senses tidal patterns, smelling salty seaweed, or hearing sounds different quality near water. Standing on a white beach of crushed cockle shells, she gazes at the East Quay's sheer wall, tracking the green line left by high tide meters above the bare seabed. She calculates the impossible volume of water rising twice daily, gravity made visible, the moon's pull creating two giant waves traveling endlessly around the Earth. At 6 years old, May envied classmates with video reporters, while she had only two issues of Storyteller magazine. Yet she became obsessed with The Goblin Rat, a Japanese fairy tale about a boy, too weak for farm work, who becomes a monk but can't stop drawing cats. After being expelled for drawing cats on temple screens, he receives advice. At night, avoid large places, keep to small. He finds an abandoned temple, compulsively draws cats on its walls, then sleeps in a small cabinet. During the night, terrible sounds shake the building. Morning reveals his cats with blood-smeared mouths beside a dead giant rat demon. The tale speaks to quiet, strange children whose obsessions infuriate adults, showing how unstoppable creative fire saves us. This illustrates what May calls deep play, not merely silliness, but complete absorption in something that matters intensely to you but appears trivial to others. It's disappearance into a space of our choosing, the pursuit of pure flow, where we test new thoughts and selves. Play is a form of enchantment. May's literary ambitions elicited disgust by 13. She buried her turquoise-inked poems in the kitchen bin, but they haunted her like revenants. She tried to kill her writing identity, avoiding English literature at university and rejecting student newspaper opportunities. But writing kept punching its way out of whatever grave she dug. Deep play is hard to reclaim once abandoned. The skills took years to relearn, asserting the right to time and space, trusting her instinct, confronting her terror of failure. Deep play is a labyrinth with no destination. The walking is the thing. Your only reward is more of the same, more wells to fill with your attention, more fires to tend. Early Sunday morning, May meets her friend Claire for a small pilgrimage to St. Nicholas Hospital, founded in 1084 as England's first leper hospital. Near a natural spring with reputed healing properties sits the Black Prince Well, named after Edward of Woodstock, who visited seeking a cure. Claire pushes back the boughs of an enormous thorny briar rose to reveal a gray limestone arch, steps leading down to a dark pool with heart-shaped rose petals floating on its surface. At the ancient healing well, May finds herself without a roadmap. Her generation inherited only forgetting. When she asks what to do, Claire simply says she spends time there. The briar catches May's raincoat. It's a guardian, Claire explains. Steps from the path, sounds muffle. May touches the water, tastes its mineral flavor, stripes some on her forehead, a half-baptism that makes her modern sensibilities slightly ashamed. Yet here is Hierophany, a place layered with human intent, playing back meanings she doesn't fully understand but feels resonating through time. On Exmoor for the Lyrid meteor shower, a supermoon threatens to drown out the stars. Her son Bert becomes enchanted with a cairn, spontaneously adding stones for each family member, precisely the meaning-making that enchantment requires. Though the bright moon obscures the meteors, she discovers their moon shadows casting silhouettes on the ground. This shadow within a shadow becomes magical. The pursuit of enchantment reveals not what we sought, but what we needed. The numinous surrounds us constantly, but requires deliberate attention. Hierophany is something we bring to everyday things. Seeking enchantment means committing to notice the world, find beauty, make time for contemplation, learn names of plants and places. As they leave, she glimpses what might be a shooting star, or tired eyes imagining one. It doesn't matter. She gets to choose its meaning. The magic is always there, waiting for your attention.